Here, I don't want to see, I've already seen these people. I've seen enough. My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the South Dixie Group, and I haven't found necessary to have a drink since January 25th, 1981. And this is a great crowd. I love this. I know 90% of you guys I know for like over like 38 years or 20 years. I haven't seen a crowd like this since last night's episode of Walking Dead. But in any event, good you guys. This is like what Abe must be like in Century Village or something. You know, I don't know. But, before I sat down, I think it was you, Billy, said what I was going to talk about. Yeah. You know, I actually did this meeting, like the last time I did this meeting, today at 9 o'clock in the morning, driving my car. I was on my way to court, and so I did this meeting, and I just want to tell you something. In my mind, it was incredible, and you fucking loved me. You know what I mean? It was just unbelievable. I don't even know why I showed up. It's all downhill from here, you know what I mean? I mean, because what goes on up here, you know, it's just not, but whatever. And so I've been around for a while. And just remember, if it's dementia, it's not denial. You know, this is my motto. It's not my fault. I was gonna file a complaint, but I forgot what I was supposed to complain about. So that's the deal. Oh, yeah, I remember what Billy said. He wanted to know whether I was going to talk about the step. I was going to talk about the step. I said, well, you let me know after the meeting, you know, whether I don't know whether anything I'm going to say has any relevance whatsoever to anything we're supposed to talk about in here. And just don't put any pressure on me. I don't want pressure, you know. And we're on the sixth step. Actually, the truth is, I almost hesitate to say this because then I'll leave and I'll say, well, that's not really true. But it is the truth. The sixth and the seventh step are my favorite steps. And I don't know whether I'll... all I can do is tell you my experience, strength, and hope. I'm not responsible for what you hear or what you believe or how you feel or even whether you understand what I'm going to say. And I have no idea what you're hearing. And even if I had an idea of what you're hearing, I don't know what you're understanding. And I don't know whether it's going to... Oh, my job is just to try to carry a message. I can't even carry the message. That's between you and the Lord. But my job is to try to be as honest as possible, you know, as honest as an alcoholic can be about who I am and what I am and my experience, and that's what I'm going to try to do. So, you know, maybe you understand something or whatever, you'll see something, and maybe at the end of this you'll understand why six and seven are important to me, maybe the most important steps. The longer I'm sober, the more important they get to me. The longer I'm sober, the more important they get to me. Even possibly, in a weird sense, more important than the 11th step. Maybe even more important than the first step. You know, I'll just point out for you, just for the heck of it, you know, just remove the mystery. The sixth step is the step where they say this is the step that separates the men from the boys. Isn't that true? Mm-hmm. They don't say the third step separates the men from the boys. They don't say the first step separates the men from the boys. They don't even say the 12th step separates men from the boys. They say this is the step that separates the men from the boys. This is the step to me that is the real nuclear-powered engine which decides whether you're going to be rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence and experience much of heaven. This is the step which, as they say, the great fact is this and nothing less than this, which decides whether God is going to be the central fact of your life. Says our Creator becomes a central factor of our lives. We are absolutely certain, not we think, we are absolutely certain that He lives in our hearts and minds in a way which is indeed miraculous, is doing for us what we can't do for ourselves. This is the step where it says, once you make this decision, all sorts of, this sincere decision, all sorts of remarkable things happen. Being all powerful, He'll give you everything you need if you stay close to Him and perform His work well. This is the step that determines, like they say in the last paragraph, whether you're going to understand, see to it that your relationship with Him is right and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the step where they talk about in the big book when they said, well, how are we going to stay sober and do this unless we know you? And then the founders say, we're not in control of that. He says, God is control of whether you meet us or that. And your reliance has to always be on Him. He will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. You know, this is a step that determines everything in your life as to whether you're going to have just mere physical sobriety or whether you're going to have emotional sobriety. this is the step that is going to determine whether or not you have freedom from alcohol or freedom from the world. You know, I love the line Jesus said. He said, in this world you will have problems. Anybody ever have problems in this world? This world is loaded with... He says, but be of good cheer, I have overcome the world. Now, what's it like to overcome the world? What's it like to be at a meeting and you're 3 months sober and there's a guy talking named Al Kennedy, and he's got like 30 or 40 years, and he's just giving a marvelous, marvelous talk. It's really uplifting, and he's helping a lot of people. And when he's done with the talk, I mean, it's just so amazed because he's just moved you so much, and you turn to your sponsor like I turned to my sponsor, and I said, man, that guy was great. That was great. Where does he go to meetings? Because I wanted to hang out with him, you know? Because I wanted what he had. I didn't know what he had. I didn't know what he had, but I wanted it. And I can tell you this. I knew I didn't have what he had. I knew I didn't have... Like in Alcoholics Number 3, the guy said, I knew there was something more. Alcoholics Number 3, Bill Dotson. I knew there was something more, something I hadn't got. And so I said that to my sponsor. My sponsor said, when I asked him, where is he hanging out, he said... This is what he said to me. My sponsor used to say crazy things to me, as I told you before. He said, well, you know, he's dying. I thought he didn't hear me because, you know, a lot of times I'd ask him questions and he wouldn't really give me the answer. Like when I told him I was broke and I needed money, he said, I think it's about time you start making coffee for the group. I didn't think there was a lack of understanding. Yeah, he marched me over to the coffee thing, you know, taught me how to make coffee, you know. And that was actually the answer, but it's not the answer on the planet Earth. It's not the answer you'll get in the bars. It's not the answer you'll get on TV. But in God's economy, making coffee for a group of people is the answer to what happens if you have money problems. But I can't explain that to you. You just have to experience it. But he said he's dying of cancer, and I said, no, I'm talking about the guy, this Al Kennedy, the guy who just spoke. He says, yeah, he's dying of cancer. He's got 6 months to live. And I said, silly me, thinking with my three-month brain, which I thought made a lot of sense, you know, I pointed out, but he didn't mention anything about that. Because I had been to quite a few AA meetings, even after 3 months, and I heard people talk about health problems and money problems and car problems, relationship problems and all sorts of problems. And so what I figured is, and I had a lot of problems, you know, and I figured AA was a place where you talked about your problems and, you know, that kind of stuff. And he gave his story and he helped a lot of people and he had terminal cancer and he didn't mention anything. So I mentioned to him that he might have been wrong. I said, you know, but he didn't say anything about that. You know, I don't know about you, but I would have certainly, I mean, you know, if I had terminal cancer, I mean, I do it in like a humble way, you know, I say, it's good to be here, you know, my name's Russell, I said, I can't tell you how happy I am to be here, I have 6 months to live, but I want to tell you something, it's not a big deal, you know, I mean, I try to get a little something from that, you know, a little, you know, man, is he at a high level, you know, but he said, no, he's got 6 months to live, and 6 months later, he died, Al Kennedy. I said, you know, I was sober. I was physically sober. I said, how do you get whatever that is? You know that guy Al Kennedy, what he had? How do you get that? How do you get that shit? You know what I mean? I want that, you know? I want that. I wanted what he had. And that's about this. That has to do with the sixth step. That has to do with the sixth step. You know, the first bunch of steps will get you sober and maybe keep you sober for a while. And quite frankly, you could stay sober on AA Light for a long period of time. But if you want to get free from the bullshit of this world, you know, you can't love God and mammon. You can't love God. If you want to get free from all the other problems, if you want to have freedom, true freedom, if you want to know a new freedom and a new happiness, you understand that kind of freedom? Freedom for other people's judgments? Helps you talk at AA meetings. You don't have to worry about what they think about you. Freedom from money, from fear of financial, not that you're going to be rich, you'll always be poor, but you won't give a shit, you know what I mean? Free of that stuff. Free not to spend money you don't have, to buy shit you don't need, to impress people you don't like, and, you know, just free to be you, you know, which is what God intends you to be you. If you want that, then you're going to be interested in the sixth step. And apparently... Not everybody does the sixth step. Not everybody does that deal. You know, they say in the big book, I think it was read here, it says, I don't have it in front of me, and I forget these things because of the dementia, but it says, it talks about being having a desire to grow and maintain a, sort of like a, what is it, a manner of living, a manner of living, a manner, you know, about a month ago, I'm going to be, well, I've been doing this for sober, almost 39 years. And about a month or two ago, I noticed that they said a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. I know I've been reading that for 38 years. I know I've been reading that, but the weird way in which this program does is like scales are removed from your eyes, and all along you get these little epiphanies and you see things in the steps that you never looked at before, so you're looking at a different way. And I realized that in the first thing we read, where it says they're constitutionally capable of being awesome, of doing this thing, incapable, it says they're unable to adopt a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty, that after I stopped drinking, it had to do with having the capacity to live in a certain way, live in the Al Kennedy way, not live in the way I used to live. Where every day, where I was trudging the road to happy destiny. I don't want to trudge that road. I know it says in the book, that's probably sacrilegious, you know. I want to be rocking in the fourth dimension of existence. I want to experience much of heaven, you know. I'm going to do some trudging. We're all going to do some trudging. You got to do some trudging to get there, but, you know, but some remarkable things can happen. I wanted Al Kennedy sobriety. Bill Wilson said the next step is emotional sobriety. And he said, the real problem with alcoholics is unhealthy dependencies. We don't even, you know, what happens with me is that after I've been sober for a long period of time and listened to a lot of people and experienced my own life, I started to realize that a lot of the problems that I had and a lot, you know, after you stop drinking, and if you come in here thinking that you have an alcohol problem or you're powerless over alcohol, which I still believe I'm powerless over alcohol, in some strange way, and I can't explain it to you, but the great thing about AA is I don't have to do a lot of explaining. If in some strange way you don't have a desire to drink and you're grateful for being sober and you love God and you're close to Him and you feel free, but somehow in the back of your mind you know that you could be drunk in an hour. Now, I don't know how to explain that. It doesn't scare you, but just know that your freedom from booze and your sobriety has absolutely nothing to do with you. Thank God, because I would fuck it up. You know what I mean? Trust me, I've run my life before, up until the age of 31, and I screwed it badly. If I was in charge of my sobriety, it'd be over. But thank God, thank you God, by the way, I am not in charge of my sobriety. It has nothing to do with me. It has to do with being close to Him and realizing who has all power. Isn't that what it says? It says there is one who has. Does it say has 90? Do I get 1% of the power? I don't even get 1% of the power. You know what half measures avail me? They avail me nothing. You know what happens if you don't get involved in the sixth step? You're doing half measures. You know what it gets you? Gets you nothing. It gets you nothing. Because the life of the boys compared to the life of the men in here is bullshit. And I can't even explain that to you. If you want to settle for childish sobriety and not go after Al Kennedy sobriety, I feel sorry for you. That's what Bill Wilson, I mean, Dr. Bob said. It said, if you have some sort of intellectual pride that keeps you from this deal, I feel sorry for you. Your Heavenly Father will never let you down. You know, it depends upon what you want to settle for. You know, and trust me, many are called, but few are chosen, you know. It's a broad highway and many go there, but it's a narrow road and few follow it, you know what I mean? It's not for everybody. It's not that deal. And I'm not putting down anybody who doesn't do it. I mean, we all get our shot, you know. I'm just here to give my testimony, and my testimony is there is something abundantly better than just mere physical sobriety. And after I got physical sobriety, which we all get, and you hang around here for 10, 20, 30 years, and you realize that nobody has a drinking problem. But, you know, they're still going to AA meetings, and every once in a while, you know, you run into somebody, and they say, you still go to those meetings? And they say, why? And You don't know what to tell them. You don't know how to explain it to them. Because you'd have to tell them, well, because I'm fucking crazy. And then you'd have to explain to them what the craziness is all about. And you say, I don't know what it's about, but every once in a while I want to kill 2,000 people. And, I don't know. It just comes upon me. I get to feel sorry for myself and I do stupid things. And I don't understand it, because you don't even understand it. But after you've heard other people's stories and you've gone to step meetings, you've read the steps, you do it, you start to connect the dots and put some stuff together. And lo and behold, after you put it all together, you read the book and say, oh, that's what they're talking about. I'm selfish. I'm self-centered. Then you start, you read it, it sounds kind of good. You know, when you first read it, it's not coming. He says, here's the truth. The root of our troubles were selfish and self-centered. We're driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking. We step on the toes of others. They retaliate seemingly without provocation, but we learn in the past we put ourselves in a position to be hurt. And the bottom line is because of our actions, because we made decisions based upon self, which puts us in that position. So we're self-aware and riot, though we usually don't think so. Above everything, we must get rid of this selfishness. We must know if it kills us. God makes it possible. Sounds great. It's like fucking poetry. You know what I mean? It's like Hamlet. You know what I mean? And then we move on to, I'm broke and where am I going to get the money and everything. And one day a sponsor comes up to you and says, well, what that means is that you only give a shit about, you don't give a shit about anybody except yourself. And that's the way you'll always be. All you give a shit about is yourself, and to the extent you give a shit about yourself, you'll never be happy, because all you do is care about you, and you'll never be able to love anybody, and all your actions will be based upon your feelings, and your feelings have everything to do with who you are, about you, and you're just, you're just your basic asshole. You'll just be another person walking the face of the earth, worrying about himself and trying to get everything that he needs, he thinks he needs to have. And that's basically what it means. And I said, well, I don't think that's what it says. I don't think it says that. And then one day you'll pick up the book, and after going through all this stuff and all these experiences and reading everything and learning yourself and going through all the trials and tribulations, that's what the Apostle James says. The book was based on James. James, 1 Corinthians 13 in the Sermon on the Mount. That's what they said in Chapter of the Gnostics. A book was written in 1939, and A started in 1935. So they say, really, I've seen a person fail has thoroughly followed our path. So their path was not reading the big book. I'm a big book aficionado. I love it. But if you read Dr. Bob and Good Old Timers, what they basically say is the books we found absolutely essential, which means essential to the power of 50, was 1 Corinthians 13, Sermon on the Mount, and the book of James. So I guess if you want to thoroughly do it, you would read those books. But then again, alcoholics get pissed off when you even suggest that, because the chapter agnostic says when you suggest God, which is the only answer, quite frankly, alcoholics get pissed off because that's part of the disease. Because part of the disease, unless until an alcoholic accepts his alcoholism and all its consequences, his sobriety will be precarious and true happiness will get none at all. And part of the consequence of being an alcoholic is you have a built-in desire not to do the stuff that's going to make you free, and to hate the person who suggests it to you. So just remember, whenever you're talking to a group of alcoholics, 50% of them are saying, I don't need to hear this shit. They're saying, I don't need to do this shit. This guy doesn't know what he's talking about. And that's because, and let me tell you why that's happened, because the chief characteristic of alcoholics is defiance. And so what you have to understand is whenever you're talking to alcoholics, you're talking to people who are, you ready for this? This is not rocket science. Alcoholic. And so they're not going to accept what you say. The hackles in their neck are going to drag up and say, this is a bunch of bullshit, and I don't want to do this, and everything like that. And they may or may not get well down the road. They may have to suffer a little bit more and that kind of stuff. And so Bill Wilson said, the next frontier, the problem with alcoholics is unhealthy dependencies. So what happens is I experience all this stuff and I start realizing with all the people I run into is that the feelings I have and the feelings they have, which are all the same feelings, are the same feelings I had when I was 10 and 15 years old before I even started drinking. The same feelings I had when I was drinking. So I start realizing that this thing called alcoholism, which apparently is more than alcohol drinking, which apparently the book says, now I get it, the book says, is but a symptom of our disease. It isn't even a disease. The real disease is situated in our minds, not our bodies. So now I understand what the story is. I'm crazy, which is probably why they have that second step where it says a higher power, God, can restore you to sanity, which I assume that the people who are restored to sanity are people who are insane, or else they wouldn't have to be restored. Does any of this make any sense? I mean, I don't even know what it has to do with the steps, but it's, yeah, I mean, I'm telling you shit that took me like 38 years to figure out, and I'm not even sure I still haven't figured out, you know? You figure, you know, when you say it, it sounds so stupid that it should I mean, I graduated with the Department of Letters and Mathematics, was going for my doctorate in algebraic topology, became a lawyer. You'd think the first 3 months I'd have this thing figured, you know what I mean? And 38 years of this bullshit. 38 years of telling sponsors you don't understand, you know what I mean? How many times can you say you don't understand, you know, or I'm different, you know, or whatever that is? And this disease is strong shit. Strong, strong, strong. I'm going to read you three things, which has to do with maybe, I don't know. Well, I'm going to read you three things. It has to do with something.
Thank you.
It has to do with something. At least, I like to read three things from AA literature, because at least, you know, at least, Cal, at least you can go back to Valdosta now that you hear these three things from AA literature, which is pure AA, and you can say, yeah, I went to an AA meeting. There was a part of the meeting where they actually talked about sobriety. And it's not a total waste for y'all, you know what I mean? Okay. First one is Bill Wilson, The Forgotten Mountain. You know, I love to read this one because it's pretty much, they actually all say, what I'm going to read all say the same thing. In Chapter of the Agnostics, I'm actually talking on that at the convention, but on Chapter of the Agnostics, one of the things they say is, if a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life would have saved us, we would have been sober a long time ago. Even the Ten Commandments, you know, some sort of code, do the next right thing. But it's a good orderly direction. If that would have saved us, we'd be sober a long time ago. But it didn't save us because we just don't have the power to do it. We may be able to do it for 5 minutes or 10 minutes or over a period of a month or something, but somewhere down the road, we're going to make that phone call, we're going to send that email, we're not give back that money we should give back, we're going to do something, it's going to be screwed up, it's going to be a bad deal, and our life is going to be miserable. It says, so we had to find a power greater than ourselves could do that, and that means we're going to talk about God. And it says, here's where alcoholics get pissed off. So understand, if you ever get to the point where you do become the men and not the boys, you do the sixth and seventh step, and God becomes the central factor of your life, and remarkable things happen to you, and it's the most exquisite thing in the world that happens to you, and you're called upon to go to an AA meeting, to give a step series, and tell them about your experience, strength, and hope. Understand that when you start explaining to them what's happened to you and why it happened to you, understand that many people are not going to like it. And that doesn't mean you're not telling them the truth. What it means is the truth will set you free, but first it'll piss you off. But you've got to be prepared when you're going to tell the truth to people and about your experience, you know, when you're going to tell the truth, you've got to be prepared to be so much attuned to that thing I was talking about, which says, he says, he'll give you everything you need if you stay close to him and perform his work well. His work is to help other people stay close to God and help other people. That's your maximum job. You got to be so attuned and close to wanting to do his will that you're less worried about what they think about you and whether they like you and more concerned that you're telling them the truth. You understand? You never want to walk out and say, I didn't tell them the truth because I was scared of what they think about me. You know, because that would be selfish. That would be selfish. Right? Yeah. If you acted away and talked in such a way that you lied or you didn't tell the truth because you were more worried you wanted them to like you, that would be a selfish thing. That would be something that alcoholics do all the time. Mm-hmm. And if you're free of alcoholism, the real alcoholism, you don't want to be involved in that. So, in any event, so let me read this. When I was a child, I acquired some of the traits that had a lot to do with my insatiable craving for alcohol. So apparently, what I'm going to talk about now, all these things where it seems I'm talking about the world, and you want to know what the real problem is? Anybody here ever watch TV? You ever watch TV?
No.
You ever watch TV and TV? You ever go to movies and stuff like that?
No.
Well, if you want to know what your problem is, just watch TV and go to the movies. Every single thing you see there, every commercial, every TV show, everything that excites you, everything that you like to see, everything that you love to see, whatever it is, everything that you crave or you wish you had or whatever it is, you know, on the tube, everything they're feeding you, Every time you look at YouTube and say, man, I wish I had that, or I wish I had that, or man, look at that lifestyle, look at that gal, oh man, she looks great. I'll never look like it. Yeah, everything that's perpetrated, everything the eyes can take in this world and the ears can hear, everything in this world, that's your problem. I drank alcohol because no woman, no car, no amount of clothes ever worked just as well and just as fast as just a few drinks. Men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. They're restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which happens at once by taking a few drinks. No woman ever worked that way, no car, no money ever worked that way, and so I drank it until the point where it stopped working, and so I don't drink it. Believe me, if it worked for me like it worked for me when I was 18, I'd still drink it, but I don't drink it anymore. But the real problem with my life is alcohol stopped working for me about 15 years before I realized it stopped working for me. But the truth is, once I gave up the alcohol to fix the problem, which is alcoholism, which I didn't even know I had, because I thought I just had an alcohol problem, then I started experiencing alcoholism, and then I realized that I was not only addicted to alcohol, I'm addicted to lust for women and sex and romance and cars and money and everything the eyes can take on. And it has the same effect on making me feel sorry for myself, making me judge myself, what a piece of shit I am, or why can't I have this, or why do they have that, and comparing my insides with other people's outsides. And the same problems that I had, and I react the same way with my sponsor. You know, 2 years before or a year before I came to AA, and they'd say to me things like, you know, maybe you ought to look at your drink. And I'd say, hey, fuck you. Hey, why don't you take your own inventory? I mean, who the hell are you? Who put you in charge? So 2 years into AA or 3 years into AA, when I say to a sponsee, you know, you ought to grow up and stop with the woman thing. And why don't you stop, womanizing on your wife? And why don't you start, you know, concentrate on traits on Bible? And they say, hey, screw you. You know, Well, you might do your own life. Who put you in charge? They said, I'm not drinking. Then they use the thing, I'm not drinking. I don't have a drink. I don't even want to drink, you know? They throw the drinking thing in front of you. That's sort of like saying, I'm working the program, when they're not doing shit. They're just one of the children, one of the boys, men from the boys. They're just one of the boys, basically living an alcoholic life, a manner of living that alcoholics live when they're selfish and they don't want to grow up. It's a manner of living, but it's not the manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. They don't even know about the Al Kennedy honesty. They don't even know that kind of living. All they know is that to them, if they're sober, that means they're working a program. And there is something to be said, no matter how things get bad, because it doesn't happen overnight. As long as you don't drink, you're a success. And there is something attuned to that, but there's so much more than that. You know, as far as, so it says, when I was a child, I acquired some of the traits that had a lot to do with my insatiable craving for alcohol. I was brought up in a little town of Vermont under the shadow of Mount Aeolus. An early recollection is that of looking up at that vast and mysterious mountain, wondering what it meant and whether I could ever climb that high. But, I was presently distracted by my aunt, who as a fourth birthday present made me a plate of fudge. For the next 35 years, I pursued the fudge of life and quite forgot about the mountain. So what's your fudge? And how long have you been pursuing it? And what do you think is going to make you happy, you know? What are you worried about losing? What are you worried about not getting? What do you feel sorry for yourself about not having? What's your fudge? What's your complaint, you know? Let's see what it says in the big book. This is page 266. I don't know when I read this, maybe when I had about 8 or 9 years. I read this story. I was not one of these guys that got into the stories real fast, but I got into 1 through 164 real fast, but I didn't get into the stories that fast, a few of them. But then one day I read this story. It's called He Sold Himself Short. These last 18 years have been the happiest of my life, trite though that statement may seem. 15 of those years I would not have enjoyed had I continued drinking. Doctors told me before I stopped that I had only 3 years at the outside to live. The latest part of my life has had a purpose, not in the great things accomplished, but in daily living. Courage to face each day has replaced the fears and uncertainties of earlier years. Acceptance of things as they are has replaced the old impatient, chomping at the bit to conquer the world. Chomping at the bit to get the gal, to get the guy, to get the money, to get the car, to get the whatever. Just fill in the blank. I have stopped tilting the windmills and instead have tried to accomplish little daily tasks, unimportant in themselves, the tasks that are an integral part of living fully. Where derision, contempt, and pity were once shown me, I now enjoy the respect of many people. Where once I had casual acquaintances, all of whom were fair-weather friends, I now have a host of friends who accept me for what I am. And over my AA years, I've had many real, honest, sincere friendships that I shall always cherish. I'm rated as a modestly successful man. My stock of material goods is not great, but I have a fortune in friendships, courage, self-assurance, and an honest appraisal of my own abilities. Above all, get this, above all that, I've gained the greatest thing accorded to any man. What do you think that is? The love and understanding of a gracious God. There's that central fact deal again. I guess I know where this guy's at. This guy's way beyond the third step. This guy's one of the men. He's camped out in the sixth and seventh step. It's not a matter with him of just getting on your knees because you have to, or maybe you want to, or maybe you want to go on with the steps and saying the third step prayer and saying, getting up and saying, okay, now it's fucking business. Business as usual, you know what I mean? I did it. I did it. Where's the money, you know? Everybody does a third step. I got a few characters don't do it. Everybody. Third step's nothing. It takes you 6 months to drag up enough courage, and then you go in your bathroom and you lock the door so nobody sees you, and you get down on your knees, and or maybe you don't, and you say the third step prayer and say, I'm done. And then you get up and try to run your life and manage your life, even though it says you can't manage your life, and rely on other people, even though it says other people can't fix it. And forget that thing God wouldn't if he could if he was short. You think you believe in God because, hey, you do say the serenity prayer at the beginning of every meeting, right? That counts. And you do hold hands and say the Lord's Prayer. That counts. I mean, it's not, you don't go to Bible. I know the book encourages church membership. I know it encourages church membership. I know it says most of us get involved in the church, you know, to get more and more involved in God. But they do add that it's optional. You know, it's optional. I don't have to do it. I'm not here for extra credit. You know what I mean? I'm just here to stop drinking. Have you had a drink today? It says, above all, I have gained the greatest thing accorded to any man, the love and understanding of a gracious God, who has lifted me from the alcoholic scrap heap to a position of trust, where I have been able to reap the rich rewards that come from showing a little love for others and from serving them as I can. That's Al Kennedy shit. That's Al Kennedy stuff. And I wanted that. I was drawn to that. I wanted that. I guess the great thing that happened to me is that when I came into alcoholics, I could not stop drinking. Did anybody ever reach the point in their life where they couldn't stop drinking? I'm serious, where you couldn't stop drinking? I don't know what kind of alcoholism you have. I only know one type of alcoholism. That's the kind of alcoholism where you can't stop drinking. Holy shit, I couldn't stop drinking. I looked the guy in the eye and said, I need help, I can't stop drinking. I couldn't stop drinking. I wake up in the morning and said, I'm not going to have a drink today, I was drunk later on. Wake up in the morning, I do it all. I'm not going to buy booze, I could not stop drinking. I got down on my knees on December 25th, 1980, and somebody came on TV at 2 o'clock in the morning, Christmas morning, I was all alone, thought my life was over, and started talking about Jesus, and got down on my knees, and I said, gave my life, said the sinner's prayer, gave my life to Jesus. And I'm not saying you got to do that, but that's what happened to me. That's my experience, which is not a big deal. But for a Jewish kid from New York, believe me, it was a big deal. I was pretty desperate. The only thing I remember then is I was in a car accident. And sometime in the first week of January, it was a car accident. And I was knocked out and almost killed somebody, almost killed myself. When I woke up, I was on a hospital gurney, and I looked up and said, God help me. And I had some sort of an experience, which I'm not even going to go into. I'm not going to talk about it. I had an experience. I had a thing. Something happened. And then the only thing I remember is my last drink. It was cold Coors beer, smuggled in by one of my friends while I was in the hospital bed. And that was my last drink, January 25th, 1981. And about 3 or 4 days later, I picked up a white chip. If I haven't found enough, I have a drink. Now, let me tell you what that's all about, why that even moves into this. I knew then, and I'm even more convinced now, that my not drinking had nothing to do with me. That's all I can tell you. I can't explain it to you. I think my not drinking was an absolute miracle. Dr. Young says to Roland Hazard, he says, you have the mind of a chronic alcoholic. I have never been able to be successful with guys like you. He said, is there no hope? He says, he talks about this phenomena, like some sort of thing, a God thing, a miracle, okay? And he says, what your problem, he says, the real problem is you need a complete psychic change. He says, ideas, attitudes, and emotions, which are the guiding force of your life, of these men's lives, change, and they become dominated by a whole new set of ideas, emotions, and attitudes. I've been trying to affect that with you. I've never done it. It was some sort of God thing or something. Mm. You know, all I know is that from the very beginning, I knew there was a miracle. I knew there was a miracle. I knew it was a miracle. And I turned towards the miracle. I turned towards the miracle, okay? You know, and when I say I turned towards the miracle, I was attracted to the miracle. What I mean by turning towards the miracle is this. When I went to AA and they said to do the Serenity Prayer, I didn't not do the Serenity Prayer. When they said hold hands to the Lord's Prayer, I didn't not do the Lord's Prayer. In other words, I didn't fight it. I'm not saying I was like an incredible believer or God was a central factor in my life or any of that stuff. That came way later because women were still the central factor in my life and money is still the central factor in my life. And that shit goes on for 15, 20 years. Let me tell you something. That shit doesn't leave fast. You know, this disease will hang in there. It's cunning, baffling, and powerful. But I can tell you one thing. I didn't turn away from the light. I didn't turn away and start thinking to myself, I'm sober for 1 year because I go to I meetings and I do all this shit and everything like that. You know what I mean? And so I could cut down on the meetings and do this and do that. Other things didn't become more important to me than God. You know, what happened is I continued to do the worldly shit and worry about the worldly shit, but also at the same time know that it had to do with the other stuff. So that's how I hired sponsors. That's how I went to meetings. Those are the people I was attracted to, the Al Kennedys. Somehow I knew about the spiritual aspect of this program, the God aspect of this program. I didn't turn it off, you know what I mean? I wanted that deal. I just didn't know, and this is what people say to me all the time. Whenever I talk about this, you know what they say to me all the time? They say, I get it. He says, this is what they say to me. They say, but how do you get it? It's not that they don't want it, it's that they don't know how to get it. And I say, well, you're going to get to experience the next 38 years trying to figure that one out. I wish I could tell you, well, just press this button, go here, go there, do this, do that, and you'll have it. Just like it doesn't work that way. This is the step that separates the men from the boys. This is perseverance time, man. This is trudging the road of happy destiny. This is getting the shit pounded out of you for 30 years, you know what I mean? And constantly and always turning to God and turning to God and turning it over and turning it over and turning it over and turning it over. And then one day at 25 years, you say, you know, I'm sick and tired of turning it over. I think I'll just live a turned over life. I think I'll just never take it back. I think I'll just trust in God for the rest of my life, no matter what happens to me, whether I get cancer, whatever. I think I'll just trust Him and never turn it back. And develop some sort of faith and decide to live your life in a godly way. You know, whether it has to do with going to church or, you know, whatever it is, studying the Bible, which is my deal, you know what I mean? Doesn't have to be your deal. Whatever it is, getting closer and closer and trying to prove your conscious contact with God all the time. Oh yeah, that's step 11. So you see, I am talking about the steps. You know, I really am. This, you know, you may not recognize this, but actually this entire talk has been about the steps. You may not realize that because I haven't said anything about alcohol, you know. So it may not seem like an AA meeting, you know what I mean? So you may think it's not. So, you know what they say, the process of getting in step 7, the process of getting a new perspective is unbelievably painful. It's only at a long road marked by successive defeats and humiliations and a final crushing of our self-sufficiency that we begin to feel humility as something more than a condition of groveling despair. Every newcomer in AA is told and soon realizes for himself that his humble admission of powerlessness over alcohol is only his first step towards liberation from his paralyzing grip. So it's a long road, not a short road. 38-year road, 20-year road. You know, people say to me, when am I going to get over this? I say, how long are you sober? He says, 5 years. He says, I don't know, 15, 20 years will be fine. Don't want to sign up for that? You got to be somewhere for 15 or 20 years, you know? Well, I guess you got to be real serious. I guess in order to do that shit, you got to be real serious. Serious as a heart attack. That's probably why in the step 6, they say this. That's probably why they say 6. You know, when you start looking at this with new eyes, you understand what the sentences mean. It says, this is the step that separates the men from the boys. By the way, the step that separates the men from the boys is not that you came to believe that a power greater than yourself or made a decision, you know, one time. This is the step that you're now ready to have God remove these defects of character. You've already made a decision initially to have God remove the alcohol. That's why you're not drinking. You may not realize that, but that's why you're not drinking. But you haven't made a decision to have God remove all the other horse shit that separates you from him. You haven't really. You haven't made a decision to have God remove your desire for sex or love or romance. You know, you're still watching the whole Hallmark channel, you know what I mean? You're still doing that shit. Yeah, this is where I start meddling in people's lives and disturbing them, you know. There's nothing wrong with that, you know. Nothing wrong with any of that stuff. You say things like, well, this is the most important, the stuff you're talking about, romance and emotions and feelings, that's the most important thing in life. How can you live life without that? But you know, that's also the way I used to talk about alcohol. That's exactly the way I used to talk about alcohol. How can I live my life without alcohol? How can I go to my daughter's wedding without drinking alcohol? I used to think I needed all that stuff, all that stuff I needed and had to have and the money thing in order to enjoy life. That's because I never experienced what it's like to live a life when you're not hooked on that shit. Shit that you don't even know you're hooked on. You don't even think you're hooked on because everybody else in the world is chasing after it anyway. And then it says, this is the step that separates the man from the boy, so declares a well-loved clergyman who happens to be one of A's greatest friends. He goes on to explain, and this is what the sixth step is all about. This is what the sixth step is all about. This isn't from me, so just complain to New York that there's some guy in Miami quoting from A literature, saying shit that's bothering you, okay? And he's got to be stopped. This is what it says. He goes on to explain that any person capable of enough willingness to honestly try repeatedly, step six on all his faults, the lust of the flesh, the paggles, the lust of the flesh, without any reservation whatever, has indeed come a long way spiritually and is therefore entitled to be called a man, and this is how you define this, who is sincerely trying to grow in the image and likeness of his own creator. And by the way, you know how long it says we do this for? It goes on for a lifetime. It's not like the fourth step, you do it like for 2 or 3 hours and then you hand it in, you know what I mean? The fifth step, you sit down with somebody. The third step, where you get down on your knees, it goes on for a lifetime, which is why they used to call 6 and 7 old-timer steps, which is why they're important to me. It's what I put in the center of my life. Finally, and then I'm going to just read this, and I'm going to end on this. You may ask, and you know, to make it even stronger, you know, or explain it to you a little bit better, on page 72, they talk about another concept. Where I hang out, we talk about God being on the throne of your heart, the manner of living. In other words, not so much whether you believe in God. I mean, a lot of people here say, oh, yeah, I believe in God. I have a higher power. I believe in God. But what if you believe in God, but what does God have to do with your everyday decisions? Is he really the central thought? Is he really, like it said in the big book, has he really become the central factor in your life? Or do you basically just sort of run your life the way you run your life, running after the things you want to run after? And, you know, once in a blue moon when you're an Amy and you say the Lord's Prayer and you say Serenity Prayer and you believe in God, but essentially you're self-propelled. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And this is what it says on page 72. This lack of anchorage to any permanent values, this blindness to the true purpose of our lives produced another bad result. For just so long as we were convinced that we could live exclusively by our own individual strength and intelligence, for just that long was a working faith in a higher power impossible. This was true even when we believed that God existed. We could actually have earnest religious beliefs which remained barren because we were still trying to play God ourselves. As long as we placed self-reliance first, the genuine reliance upon higher power was out of the question. That basic ingredient of all humility, a desire to seek and do God's will, was missing. So apparently, and this is what I found, it's not so much whether you believe in God, but it has to do with you are so focused on God that he's become the central factor of your life that you really pretty much don't believe in anything else. but him. That he's the one, number one thing in your life. And if actually you read the big book, you find that that's what it's all about anyway. So thank you very much. Okay. Let me see. We got some stuff we're going to do. In South Florida, we have a chip system. Well, any announcements for the good of AA? Madam Bartender.
Yes, announcements are Sable Palm 26th Anniversary Party will be Saturday, August 17th at 5 p.m. At the church, served at 5:30 and a speaker at 7. Please reach out.